anymore. This is Democracy Now.
The hardest thing I've seen is when a father was searching for his son. In the end, we found out that his son was with us, but only in pieces.
Hospitals in Lebanon are overwhelmed as Israel ramps up attacks with more than 2,000 people killed, including at least 127 children, most of them in the past 2 weeks. We'll get the latest from Beirut. Meanwhile, Israel continues its relentless attacks on Gaza.
We were at home when we heard explosions and planes. We could not leave our homes. We wanted to go out to a safe place, like the city by the sea or Mawasi, but we could not get there because of the planes. Whoever left her home was killed because of the quadcopters. There was heavy fire all night. It started from 7 p.m. until 3:30 a.m. nonstop.
Gaza authorities say Israel's long, year-long war has wiped 902 entire families off the civil registry. We'll go to Gaza for an update, then separate it. Oscar winner Errol Morris has a new documentary out about family separation under the Trump administration.
Separation from your parents is a profoundly traumatizing event. But systematic separation of children from parents, officially, it wasn't happening. But it was happening.
Separated is based on the book by NBC News correspondent Jacob Soboroff. We'll speak with Soboroff and director Errol Morris. More than 1,000 children are still separated from their parents today. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israel's military has carried out its heaviest airstrikes so far in Lebanon, with a reported 10 massive bombings overnight in Beirut's densely populated southern suburbs. Lebanon's health minister reports at least 2,000 people have been killed since the start of the Israeli attacks on Lebanon, including at least 127 children, most of them in the last 2 weeks. On Thursday, World Health Organization Director Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus said Israeli attacks had made it impossible for the WHO to deliver a large shipment of trauma and medical supplies to Beirut. He said Israeli strikes have killed 28 health workers in just one 24-hour span, while shuttering dozens of hospitals and clinics.
In southern Lebanon, 37 health facilities have been closed, while in Beirut, three hospitals have been forced to fully evacuate staff and patients, and another two were partially evacuated. Many health workers are not reporting to duty as they fled the areas where they work due to bombardments.
A Pentagon spokesperson said Thursday U.S. military leaders are consulting with their Israeli counterparts on a response to Iran's ballistic missile attack earlier this week on Israeli military bases and other security sites.
We continue to engage the Israelis, you know, very frequently. We are certainly talking to them about their response, but what their response might be, I'm just not going to speculate further on.
At the White House, President Biden acknowledged he'd spoken with Israeli leaders to discuss possible attacks on Iran's oil infrastructure.
Hey, would you support Israel striking Iran's oil facilities, sir?
We're in discussion with that. I think that would be a little, anyway.
Biden had said that he did not support Israel striking Iran's nuclear facilities. Biden's comment rattled energy markets, causing an immediate spike in crude oil prices. Meanwhile, Iran has threatened an unconventional response to any Israeli retaliation, including attacks targeting Israeli infrastructure. Earlier today, Iran's supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, led prayers in Tehran for the first time in nearly 5 years, as he commemorated Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah, assassinated by Israel last week in Lebanon. Khamenei called on Muslim leaders to band together to confront Israel. Meanwhile, Yemen's Houthis released video showing what appears to be an attack earlier this week on the British oil vessel, the Cordelia Moon, in the Red Sea. The Houthis have vowed to maintain a naval blockade until Israel halts its war on Lebanon and the Palestinian territories. Meanwhile, Israel continues its relentless attacks on Gaza, with Israeli forces blowing up residential buildings near the Nusayrat camp and civilian homes in Deir al-Balah and Khan Yunis. Palestinian Health Ministry reports at least 14 people were killed and 50 wounded over the last 24 hours. Here in the United States, a group of nearly 100 physicians, nurses, surgeons, and midwives have sent a letter to President Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris detailing, quote, crimes beyond comprehension they witnessed in Gaza. They're calling on the U.S. to support a ceasefire, to end support for Israel's military, and to back an international arms embargo on Israel. Part of the letter reads, quote, "We wish you could see the nightmares that plague so many of us since we've returned. Dreams of children maimed and mutilated by our weapons and their inconsolable mothers begging us to save them," unquote. An Israeli airstrike on the occupied West Bank has killed at least 18 Palestinians. On Thursday, Israeli fighter jets targeted a crowded cafe in the Tulkarm refugee camp, leaving behind twisted piles of wreckage and flaming debris. This is Nimer Fahd, the brother of the cafe's owner who was killed in the attack.
The missiles targeted a civilian building. A family was wiped from the civil registry. What was their fault? The family was asleep in their house. There's no safe place for the Palestinian people. The Palestinian people have the right to defend themselves.
Israel's military claimed the bombing targeted the head of Hamas's infrastructure in Tulkarm. It was the largest and deadliest airstrike in the occupied West Bank in more than two decades. Here in the United States, union dock workers along the East Coast and Gulf Coast have ended a three-day strike and will resume negotiations for a new contract. A tentative agreement on pay for some 45,000 members of the International Longshoremen's Association will see workers' wages increase by 62% over the life of the contract. The union and the U.S. Maritime Alliance will extend the existing contract until mid-January to give negotiators more time to finalize a deal. In more labor news, Boeing's revoked health care benefits for some 33,000 aerospace workers who went on strike 3 weeks ago. In a statement supporting the workers, Vermont Independent Senator Bernie Sanders wrote, quote, "Boeing's greed offers another perfect example of why we need Medicare for all," Sanders said. The death toll from Hurricane Helene has climbed to 213, making it one of the deadliest hurricanes to hit the United States since modern record-keeping began after Hurricane Katrina and Hurricane Maria. Hundreds remain missing and are feared dead. More than half of the deaths were in North Carolina, where on Thursday, private helicopter companies joined efforts to bring aid to mountain communities cut off by flood damage. This is pilot Brooke Barzik, who delivered food, water, and other supplies to the hard-hit Swannanoa Valley.
It's absolute devastation. Even just this valley through here is decimated. And I think the one thing that stands out the most is even after it had been several days since it had happened, there still was no aid here at all.
Vice President Kamala Harris rallied supporters on Thursday in the city of Ripon, Wisconsin, known as the birthplace of the Republican Party. Harris was joined on stage by Republican and former Wyoming Congress member Liz Cheney, who's endorsed Harris for president.
Liz Cheney really is a leader who puts country above party and above self, a true patriot, and it is my profound honor to have your support.
Harris also thanked the Republican former Vice President Dick Cheney, Liz Cheney's father, one of the most influential architects of George W. Bush's invasion of Iraq, for his endorsement. Speaking to Harris's supporters, Liz Cheney took aim at Donald Trump, calling him petty, vindictive, cruel, and depraved. During her three terms in Congress, Cheney voted against an assault weapons ban, earned an A rating from the anti-abortion group Pro-Life America, and expressed support for plans by Israel to annex parts of the occupied West Bank. Melania Trump has spoken publicly in favor of the right to have an abortion. The former First Lady made the remarks in a video teasing the release of her new self-titled memoir.
Without a doubt, there is no room for compromise when it comes to this essential right. that all women possess from birth: individual freedom. What does my body, my choice really mean?
Melania Trump's statement puts her at odds with most of the Republican Party, including her husband, Donald Trump, who's boasted about overturning the constitutional right to an abortion. On Saturday, Trump's planning to return to Butler, Pennsylvania, to rally supporters at the site of July's assassination attempt against him. He'll be joined on stage by billionaire Elon Musk. In Tennessee, three former Memphis police officers have been acquitted of violating the civil rights of Tyree Nichols, a 29-year-old black father who died after the officers brutally beat him during a traffic stop in January of last year. The jury found just one of the officers, Demetrius Haley, guilty of the lesser charge of violating Nichols' civil rights, causing bodily injury. Haley, along with former officers Tadarius Bean and Justin Smith, were all found guilty of witness tampering related to the cover-up of the deadly beating. Two other officers, Emmett Martin and Desmond Mills Jr., pleaded guilty to federal civil rights charges ahead of the trial. To see our coverage of Tyree Nichols, go to democracynow.org. In the Democratic Republic of Congo, at least 78 people were killed after a ferry boat capsized in the eastern Lake Kivu, though local authorities say the death toll could be significantly higher as rescue efforts continue. The disaster comes as an increasing number of people have been forced to cross Lake Kivu, often in overcrowded vessels, as they attempt to reach Goma while avoiding travel across territory plagued by fighting between Congolese government forces and M23 rebels.
Since there's no longer a road between Goma and Minova, many people are suffering. What happened is the government's fault. Only one boat, instead of two, left Minova today, and it took on double its usual load. If the road was operational, vehicles could have transported some of the people and goods.
And Mexican authorities have arrested several soldiers involved in the fatal shooting Tuesday of six asylum seekers who were aboard a truck with over a dozen others when the soldiers opened fire. At least 10 people were injured. The group, many from Egypt, India, and Pakistan, had recently crossed into the southern Mexican state of Chiapas from Guatemala. Mexico's newly inaugurated president, Claudia Sheinbaum, condemned the attack as deplorable and called for an investigation. Mexican soldiers and police have been widely accused of human rights violations, including the massacre of asylum seekers, as Mexico collaborates with the Biden administration in a crackdown on people seeking refuge in the United States. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We begin today's show in Lebanon, where Israel carried out its heaviest airstrike so far in Beirut, with a reported series of 10 massive strikes overnight in the densely populated southern suburbs. Lebanon's health minister said Thursday at least 2,000 people have been killed since the start of the Israeli attacks on Lebanon, including at least 127 children, most of them in the past 2 weeks. Lebanon's state-run national news agency is also reporting Israeli airstrikes damaged the main border crossing between Lebanon and Syria, closing the main road used by tens of thousands to flee Israel's attacks on Lebanon. More than 1.2 million Lebanese have now been displaced. Meanwhile, Beirut hospitals are overwhelmed. This is Dr. Jihad Sadeh, general director of Rafiq al-Hariri Hospital, largest Lebanese public hospital.
The hardest thing I've seen was when a father was searching for his son. In the end, we found out that his son was with us, but only in pieces.
On Thursday, the World Health Organization director, Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, said Israeli attacks have made it impossible to deliver a large shipment of trauma and medical supplies to Beirut. He said Israeli strikes killed 28 health workers in just one 24-hour period, while shuttering dozens of hospitals and clinics. At least 50 paramedics have been killed in Lebanon over the past 2 weeks. This comes as the UN peacekeeping force in southern Lebanon told Al Jazeera the Israeli army has asked its troops to leave their positions close to the border amidst a potential escalation of the Israeli ground incursion. Iran's foreign minister, Abbas Araghchi, arrived in Beirut today and met with Lebanese caretaker Prime Minister Najib Mikati just hours after Israeli airstrikes hit an area near the airport where he landed. A Pentagon spokesperson said Thursday U.S. military leaders are consulting with their Israeli counterparts on a response to Iran's ballistic missile attack earlier this week on Israeli military bases and other security sites.
We continue to engage the Israelis, you know, very frequently. We are certainly talking to them about their response, but what their response might be, I'm just not going to speculate further on.
At the White House, President Biden acknowledged he'd spoken with Israeli leaders. He has said he does not support Israel attacking Iran's nuclear sites, but discussed possible attacks on Iran's oil infrastructure.
Would you support Israel striking Iran's oil facilities, sir?
We're in discussion of that. I think that would be a little, anyway.
Biden's comment rattled energy markets, causing an immediate spike in crude oil prices. Meanwhile, Iran has threatened an unconventional response to any Israeli retaliation, including attacks targeting Israeli infrastructure. Earlier today, Iran's supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, led prayers in Tehran for the first time in nearly 5 years as he commemorated Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah, who was assassinated by Israel last week in Lebanon. Khamenei called on Muslim leaders to band together to confront Israel. As tensions continue to escalate in the region, we go to Beirut, Lebanon. We're joined by Karim Chahayeb. He is reporting on Lebanon, Syria, and Iraq for the Associated Press. Thank you so much for being with us, Karim. Can you explain the situation on the ground after this night of massive air attacks by Israel?
So it's become next to normal that Israel is conducting a series of airstrikes, roughly about a dozen, mostly in the southern Beirut suburbs, which has a lot of people, and it's still a larger number of people are evacuating, but there's still people who live there. The strikes are getting far more intense. Particularly last night, we heard a strike that, you know, had some sort of numerous explosions that happened after that as well. Meanwhile, every day the Israeli military is calling on the immediate evacuation of about another dozen or so towns from the south. So it's been several days where they've been doing that. There's been a few dozen towns, and medical workers have been having a very hard time operating there. The Lebanese Red Cross, while, you know, relocating wounded people from the south, where we're caught in an Israeli airstrike, where four of their volunteers were wounded. The Lebanese soldier was killed in that evacuation operation. And, you know, there are reports now that one of the most important hospitals in the southeast is closing its doors because of a strike that hit very close to the hospital. So this appears to be becoming the new normal in this current situation. You know, there's the ground incursion in the south where Hezbollah and Israeli military are clashing in border towns and along the border. Israel is calling for more and more immediate evacuations from southern Lebanon, very far north into the country. And it appears that, you know, strikes overnight in the southern suburbs are going to continue. And now with the airstrike that struck the main road towards the main crossing between Lebanon and Syria, generally speaking, people are concerned that the airport could be next, given that this had also happened in 2006, which was the last time Hezbollah and the Israeli military had a war.
Can you talk about the number of paramedics, doctors, medical staff who've been killed just in the last few days, Karim? And what kind of effect is this bombing has had on the hospitals and what the World Health Organization head, Ghebreyesus, has said about trying to get aid into Beirut right now?
Indeed, there have been several cases of paramedics being killed in Israeli strikes, but the number has certainly surged in this particular escalation. There have been dozens who were killed, whether they were in the middle of an operation or whether they were in their offices. There was a strike in central Beirut, just a few hundred meters from where I am right now, into an office for the Islamic Health Committee, which is Hezbollah's medical arm. And at least seven paramedics and first responders were killed in that strike. And at a time where evacuations orders have increased, at a time where strikes have intensified, the hospitals are really struggling to keep up with the number of patients. And of course, medical staff, paramedics, first responders are also struggling a lot to get people out. And this appears to be a trend going forward in this conflict.
And what have you been able to find out about Israel using white phosphorus? Explain what it is and where you believe it may have been used.
Sure. So, you know, early on in the conflict, Israel was initially accused by residents and human rights groups of using white phosphorus in southern Lebanon, especially, you know, in villages along the border, which are very, you know, rural, they're agrarian, there's lots of greenery and fields. Now, white phosphorus is a very dangerous weapon where it sort of, it burns all the way to the bone if in contact with human skin. It can cause severe respiratory illnesses as well if you inhale too much of it. The concern is that if it's used in heavily populated areas, it is considered a violation of international law. Now, Israel always says that it uses it as a smokescreen or to, primarily as a smokescreen, not to target civilians or as a weapon of war. Human Rights Watch and Amnesty and other organizations have corroborated information where they have seen that this is not entirely the case. That's what they've concluded. Now, the conversation, you know, months later, just the other day, has sort of come back. In that strike, I had told you about just a moment ago, where in central Beirut that hit that office and another strike nearby in the southern suburbs, you know, people were talking a lot about unpleasant smells, and state media had reported that there was use of white phosphorus. Now, there is no confirmation of that yet. We had spoken to the health minister, Firas Abiyat, who said that they're in the process of verifying it. There have been no updates on that, but it would not have been the first time Israel used white phosphorus in Lebanon. But the previous incidents have been in southern Lebanon. But there has been no sort of official confirmation yet. But that's sort of what's been reported.
Karim, if you could also talk about who Israel is claiming they're trying to kill right now, the target Hashem Safieddine, a cousin and presumed successor to the assassinated Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah.
Absolutely. So, you know, after Hassan Nasrallah was assassinated, every expert from every think tank and every corner that I spoke to believed that Hashem Safieddine would be his successor. He's a senior figure in Hezbollah for many years, plays a very important role within the institution. He is a relative. He's a cousin of Hassan Nasrallah, and his son is married to the daughter of the late senior Iranian general, Qasem Soleimani, who was killed in U.S. airstrike in Iraq in 2020. So he's very connected to Tehran. He's very connected to Hezbollah. It is unclear whether, you know, he survived the strike, whether he was in the building where the strike took place. Hezbollah have not yet commented on it. But if he was targeted and killed or wounded, this follows a certain pattern over the past couple of weeks where the Israeli military, through its strikes, have been targeting senior Hezbollah leaders. And they have, targeted senior Hezbollah military leaders and also members within its institution. And this could be a continuation of that pattern, but there is no information on that. But it is true that Hashem Safieddine is widely seen as Hassan Nasrallah's successor. And it is very unclear whether they're going to pick him or somebody else or when they will make that decision. When the Deputy Secretary General, Sheikh Naim Qasim, spoke a few days ago, he said that they will make that decision at the soonest possibility. And it's unclear how they're going to, you know, navigate with the situation, but it is widely seen that if Safieddine was targeted, it's really unknown who to expect would replace Hassan Nasrallah.
And now the Iranian foreign minister, Abbas Araghchi, says he's visiting Lebanon to make clear Iran will always stand with people of Lebanon. Can you talk about the significance of the Iranian foreign minister being in Lebanon right now and of the supreme leader, Iran's supreme leader, Ali Khamenei, holding the prayers in Tehran, presiding over them publicly for the first time in 5 years as he commemorated the Hezbollah leader who was killed by Israel last week?
Yeah, so the Iranian foreign minister, you know, has been holding meetings with senior officials, including Prime Minister Najib Mikati, who's off right behind me in this building. And, you know, it appears that, you know, in the words that they're saying, that Iran is, you know, trying to garner international support for Lebanon, trying to pile the pressure diplomatically on Israel. That's how they've been spinning it. They've talked a lot in that sense. For them to come at a time like this is certainly interesting. Iranian senior military officials have been killed in Israeli strikes in Lebanon and Syria over the past year. And there were a lot of questions whether the Israeli military would allow his plane to land at Beirut Airport. Now, the question really is what happens behind the scenes, right? So the Lebanese government, including allies of Hezbollah, so, you know, they have been trying to push for a ceasefire and handle this diplomatically. And it's unclear what that conversation looks like with Iran, as well as their conversations with, you know, namely the United States and Paris. You know, this also comes not long after Iran met with Saudi officials in Qatar. And it's also, you know, and it's unclear whether this indicates that they are, you know, trying to work something out or not. You know, Iran has, you know, not given a lot of statements. You know, the foreign minister did not give any statements after meeting the prime minister. Issued a statement after meeting the Speaker of Parliament, and he sort of talked about, you know, maintaining support for Lebanon. And there's a lot of talk about humanitarian aid. It wasn't anything that indicated it's going to be a significant shift in this conflict. It appears that whatever changes will happen will be seen, you know, in the battlefields in the south or in Beirut.
And the significance of the death of a Lebanese soldier carrying out a rescue operation in southern Lebanon, another one injured, Karim, what this means, and the Israeli government saying the UN peacekeeping force in southern Lebanon should move. How quickly do you see this escalating even further as we wrap up?
Certainly, you know, the Lebanese army announcing that two of its soldiers were killed in Israeli airstrikes in a single day in different instances, and, you know, on top of the intensified airstrikes, on top of, you know, the calls for dozens of villages and towns to evacuate, including a provincial capital in the south. There's a lot of concerns in Lebanon about, you know, where this ground incursion could lead to and how long this will last. You know, the public works minister, after, you know, talking about the road to the border, you know, being bombed, is saying that, you know, that he is concerned even about now a siege from air as well, almost hinting that the airport could be a target. So, you know, things are moving at a very, very fast pace, the displacement, the airstrikes, and it is really unclear what the end game for Israel is. They say that they want to weaken Hezbollah, they want to create an environment that's safe for their displaced residents to go back north, but it's not really clear what that benchmark is, what those objectives look like in practice.
Karim Chahayev, first of all, stay safe. I want to thank you so much for being with us. AP journalist reporting on Lebanon, Syria, and Iraq. Journalist for the Associated Press speaking to us from Lebanon's capital, Beirut. As Israel continues its relentless attacks on Gaza, we will go directly to Gaza. Stay with us.
التي أحيا نصيبي من مآسيكم وأهديكم ضياع عيني ودفء القلب أعطيكم فمأساتي التي أحيا نصيبي من مآسيكم أناديكم أشد على أياديكم وأبوس الأرض
أناديكم I call out to you by Ahmed Kabur. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We turn now to Gaza, where authorities say Israel's year-long war has now wiped out a shocking 902 entire families off the civil registry. Another 1,300 families where only one family member has survived. The official death toll in Gaza has topped 41,800, but that's believed to be a vast undercount. On one day in Gaza this week, Israel killed over 100 people with 51 in Khan Yunis alone, including 12 children. Over the last 24 hours, the Palestinian Health Ministry reports at least 14 people were killed, 50 wounded in Gaza, as Israel bombed residential buildings near the Nusayrat camp and struck civilian homes in Deir al-Bala and Khan Yunis. This comes as Israeli forces have killed at least 50 Palestinians across the West Bank since launching raids on August 28th. An Israeli airstrike Thursday on the Tul Karim refugee camp killed at least 18 Palestinians when an Israeli fighter jets targeted a crowded cafe, the largest and deadliest airstrike in the occupied West Bank.